Welcome to Linux Link Radio by TimeSys, the podcast for embedded Linux developers who want to simplify and speed up their custom platform development. Visit TimeSys.com today for access to our podcast archives.
Welcome back. Today we have in our studio two of TimeSys engineers, Justin Waters and Scott Sweeney. And we're going to talk about Qt today. Justin, that's your favorite topic, and I know from many, many conversations that you like to talk about Qt.
Well, I don't know that that's fair. I think it would be my favorite topic next to Git.
Yes, I forgot.
But that'll be for another podcast.
Okay, that's actually a great idea. And if we have some time at the end of today's session, we should tackle it, or at least introduce the topic. So Qt... what's Qt? Qt, what is it?
It's basically an entire application framework for Linux. As far as we use it for Linux, it's also available for Windows. It's cross-platform. It's designed to help you make applications that are easily portable between different systems. It's not just a graphical framework. It actually includes a lot of things that lie underneath. There's a WebKit framework for that. There's things for interfacing with databases. So the idea is that you would use this, that you would use Qt, or Qt as it's actually pronounced by the folks that made it in the first place.
Yeah.
You can use it to develop an application from the ground up.
Okay. Yeah, and about who made it. So the company is called Trolltech, for those of you who are not familiar with Qt. And Trolltech was acquired by Nokia. So today, if you work with Qt, you're working with Nokia software. So Qt, as you said, it's designed to help the end users, companies, to easily move their applications between different operating systems and between probably even different platforms, right? So if you have PowerPC, ARM, x86 running several different operating systems, whether that's I think Windows CE, right? There's Linux, there is Mac OS, there is a one other I thought. Oh yes, there's also Symbian that supports Qt. So as you design your applications, Qt API will allow you to very easily migrate between different platforms without changing much.
Right.
Okay. Now, historically, Qt, I guess the Qt that you were talking about, it's probably more of a Qt embedded, which is the latest package released by Nokia. But historically, they have... the Qt package or software, Trolltech, has been focusing around cell phones, right? What was the package?
Well, so as of 6 months ago, there was actually what was known as Qtopia, which was actually a package of... it was actually an entire system for a cell phone environment. Mm-hmm. It included a desktop and a bunch of applications that you would use. The OpenMoco Neo phones actually have a distribution of Qtopia that work on them, and you can actually see it running as a phone.
Okay.
But that was different from the actual Qt environment or the Qt framework. The name escapes me right
now. Qt Extended, right?
Well, okay. Well, so...
is that what you're talking about?
The terminology is actually a little confusing. They've changed it around a few times over the past few months.
Yep.
Okay, you had Qt and you had Qtopia.
Right.
What they then did is they merged them into Qtopia.
Uh-huh.
Basically, they changed the terminology. So Qt Extended is equivalent to the phone distribution.
I see.
They completely dropped the Qtopia terminology.
I see.
And once they did that, they pretty much, as of right now, they've dropped Qt Extended completely.
Okay. So the Qtopia or Qt Extended, that was a primary system used by cell phones. That has been kind of like it is being phased out, and a lot of the code that it produced or hosted is right now being moved to Qt embedded, or is that being dropped entirely?
So, Qt embedded is only one, is actually one piece. It's actually Qt embedded Linux is actually what it's called. Qt embedded Linux is it's a standalone Qt environment. It doesn't require an X server. It goes directly on top of the frame buffer.
Okay.
Whereas Qt X11 is the version that goes on top of it. So Qt there's really no such thing as Qt embedded. It's Qt embedded Linux.
Okay.
And that's just embedded Linux is one of the targets.
Okay.
So you've got Qt embedded Linux. You've got Qt X11, Qt Windows.
Okay.
But
how does it compare to phased out Qt extended?
So what they've done is they've moved some of the applications over that they thought were really cool.
Okay.
And they added them as demos or examples.
Okay.
Right now, they're not focusing so much on having the integrated environment like they did before with Qt
right.
extended. So instead they want you to use it to make your own environments.
Right.
If you look at what's out there,
yeah.
There are probably I can't actually think of any actual devices besides the OpenMoco that ran Qt extended.
Well, there's a couple of them, right?
Well, there's that and the green the OpenMoco and the green phone.
And there's a number of products out there that have implemented Qt extended or Qtopia, but it's not directly visible because they implemented also their own look and feel.
Right. So what ends up happening is all of the work that they were doing on the desktop environment for Qt extended wasn't really making its way into final products anyway. So they decided to focus their attention elsewhere.
Even the official OpenMoco distribution just picked and chose certain applications from Qt embedded to use for their dialer and the message application and everything, but they didn't take the whole desktop.
Yeah, and I think that this is what we also see in embedded space, right? If a company tries to build a product, they are not going to necessarily need a desktop for multiple applications. They will need a one or two applications that interact with each other, and that's pretty much it. So the need for a desktop, I agree that it's kind of like an artificial almost software that is nice to demonstrate the feature capability of the entire framework, but in the end it's not that useful. I mean, it is probably for applications like cell phones where you need to have some sort of manager for different applications, and end users are or expect to have a launcher of some sort that they can pick different apps. But other than that space, if you look at networking or industrial control, that feature functionality, I think, is not used at all. And that's probably why they moved away from it. And that way they can enable various other markets with the same software, the same API.
Right. And that actually helps me to segue into another one of the topics you wanted to discuss, which is the build system.
Yeah.
One of the biggest problems with Qt Extended was the fact that it included the desktop and it was so configurable
mm-hmm.
that it was actually extremely hard to port. To various devices, like the configuration files themselves were very small, but we deal with so many boards here,
right?
That it's extremely difficult to custom tailor that to each individual product, and there's so much logic in there for how to make it work on your platform that I would think that they felt that complexity was more of a burden than an actual aid to people.
So this is actually a very interesting point that you're making, because it means that there are two separate sets of feature functionality. One which is a system level feature functionality that ties to a degree to a hardware platform. And then there is a, I would say, application specific API that tries to leverage the system, right? So it sounds like Qt Embedded for Linux or for X11 or any other system is dealing with the second layer, where you have API and somewhat universal view of underlying hardware. Whereas in Qtopia, because of desktop, because of all the other software that you had to have running on a system, you had to first look after the system platform, how to build it, how to adopt it to a new hardware before you were able to deploy your application on top of it. So today, and I know that from observing you guys working with different boards with Qt, you can, for example, use a standard touchscreen, TSLib, from the Linux kernel and pass it on to Qt Embedded. You see, I'm confused still about the names. And that's going to work, right? Whereas in the past, I think that there was a separate software that was dealing with touchscreen and different inputs in Qtopia. So in Qtopia, did you have separate software as part of an engine that was dealing with plugins for touchscreens and keyboards and all that?
No, I don't think that's actually changed much. The input stuff, I don't believe is really all that much different. So for the current version for Qt Embedded Linux, you basically just build in TSLib,
right?
And I'm pretty sure it was the same beforehand as well.
So what was the attachment to the hardware?
That was all taken care of by the Linux kernel.
So why was it difficult to build it for Qt Extended or Qtopia to adjust it to
the problem? The problem was sort of the how keys worked and what your screen geometry was.
Okay.
And how so? In some instances, you have you actually have a hardware keyboard where you need to reconfigure your entire desktop environment to take that into account. So you don't include your keyboard, and you don't include your soft keyboard anymore.
And that is not there right now in a Qt embedded.
Right? Yeah, I don't believe they carried over. Well, last I checked, they hadn't carried over the soft keyboard. But even if they had, it's not tightly integrated anymore.
Okay.
So you don't have to worry about that sort of configuration option.
So splitting that into different blocks and components allows you to also build it much easier.
Right.
Okay.
Yeah, and you can worry about the integration yourself in your own environment.
Right. So tell me a bit about the Neophone. I know, guys, that you both own one, and when it was available, you were probably one of the first ones that got it.
Yeah, we ordered it pretty much the day it became available in North America, didn't we?
Yeah, yeah. It was a long process.
Yeah,
I remember having a lot of issues with the website.
Took a few tries,
but
so
eventually got our phones.
Tell me a bit about your experience with Qt and as a graphics toolkit running on Neo. Was it easy to work with to develop for Neo?
I don't think we really did a lot of development work for the Qtopia stuff on there. It was mostly a usability thing.
Okay.
I actually, that was the distribution that I used the most on the phone. Mm-hmm. While I was actually using it as a primary phone, there were, of course, there were a few things that were a little bit frustrating, that didn't quite work the way that you wanted them to, but it was something that was still in flux, and it goes along with the whole, they were trying to create a generic desktop environment with Qt Extended that would work on any platform, and it just didn't. There were certain things that it just didn't do right.
Okay.
That made it a little difficult to use, and it felt like they would fix two bugs, but one new one would pop up, and it was nice upgrading, but there was always. There was always something that kept it from being completely awesome.
Yeah, so because of the complexity, I guess, of a system, it was difficult to keep it or maintain it and then provide a quality API to end user to extend it or play with it, right?
Right. I personally didn't really do any Qtopia development. I did mostly GTK and Glade, but I used the Qtopia distribution just as the phone before, and as Justin was saying, there was like a lot of just little problems with it. Overall, it worked pretty well, but there were just, you know, little annoyances, and eventually I switched to an Enlightenment-based distribution called Stable Hybrid Release. It's actually really good. So
is it also based on Qt? No, that's no, GTK.
Enlightenment has its own toolkit.
Oh, okay.
So
tell me a bit about Enlightenment. Enlighten me.
Well, okay. It's actually been around for quite a while on the desktop. I've only really started to see it used in embedded environments. Really, the OpenMoko is the first piece of hardware, embedded hardware, that I've ever seen running Enlightenment. They're on the, I guess, the 17th release, which has been in alpha for almost as long as Wine was.
Okay.
You know, a number of
years.
That's
a while.
Yeah, and it's actually very fast, and it's along the same lines as GTK as far as development.
Okay.
It's like a widget toolkit. It's okay. Not so much the underlying abstractions that Qt provides. It's really more of a...
What you see is what you get.
Right. It's a more of a windowing and widget toolkit and a desktop manager.
Is it... does it require X, or does it have its own...
It runs on top of X.
Okay. So I think that this is where Qt Embedded and Qtopia right from the start tried to differentiate itself by not using X, right? As far as certain performance metrics are concerned, for certain applications, X was a bottleneck.
Right.
So, but then again, processors are getting faster. The hardware that you run X is getting better. There's also a small footprint version of X available that is performing quite okay in the embedded system. One example is, I guess, Angstrom distribution, right? That uses X with GTK and also Linux Link starting points that we provide to customers that leverage. What's the name of the X that we have? Do you guys know? Is that Nano? No, that's not Nano X, right? That's but it's the small footprint version of a X that is delivered. I think it's roughly a couple of megs on a...
One other problem I had with Qtopia was that when it's running directly in the frame buffer, you can only run Qtopia apps. You can't run a GTK app or an Enlightenment app because it needs the X server. So you can't really mix and match so well if you're running the full Qtopia environment.
Right, so you'd need a Qt for X.
Right.
Right.
I see.
But with the official OpenMoko distribution right now, they run certain Qt apps and certain GTK apps all on an X server. So it allows them to have more flexibility as far as what using the best application that you can for this particular purpose as opposed to what fits within the framework we already have.
Yeah. That's actually a great approach. If performance metrics are there and you can live with what X injects as a overhead to processing different events in a system for graphics, I think it's an ideal scenario because there are companies that have been developing GTK applications for a while and there are companies that have been developing Qt applications for a while. So it's I agree. It's the best of both worlds.
That's right.
Let's talk briefly about the tools. You've mentioned that the Illumination, is that?
Illume.
Okay.
And, which is sort of embedded environment for Enlightenment.
So Illume is an IDE?
No, it's the desktop framework.
Okay.
Sort of like a embedded, and it's just basically an embedded Enlightenment framework. And as far as tools, there's not really a devoted IDE for it. It's, you know, Vim and GCC.
So how do you do, there are no tools for drag and drop on a layout. What you see is what you get kind of design tool.
I have not seen anything like that for the Enlightenment toolkit.
But you worked with Glade?
Right, I worked with Glade when I did a medical app on GTK.
So what is Glade? Glade is an IDE that allows you to... use a canvas and then design a UI?
Right. It's sort of, I would characterize it as a piece of an IDE, because you don't really do, you don't really write code in it. You really just, you sort of build your user interface, and then you sort of export it from Glade, and then your code just uses it. And there are a couple of IDEs for Linux that actually use Glade as a component. So that sort of gives you that integrated UI and code development environment.
All right.
But Glade itself is really just it's like a specialized UI design.
So it generates C or C++ code that describes what the boxes are, right? So if I have a button that I add to a canvas and I put an OK or something on the button, Glade is going to generate necessary C++ code that will show that box, but it won't generate any code to control it.
Right. Well, what it'll do is it'll export sort of an XML format that describes what the where all the widgets are in relation to each other, how they're related, and it. You can also hook up signals to them, you know, but mouse clicked or text entry or enter button hit, and it'll sort of generate the function stubs to handle those events. So it does it does generate some code, and it's actually very useful in that because it gives you a sort of a high level view of how you interact with your application, and then sort of generates all the skeleton so that you can go back in later and fill in the details.
What happens if you fill in the details and then later on you decide that you need one more button?
Hopefully you can just fire Glade back up if you haven't done anything too scary to the code. You can just open Glade back up, make your changes, and then re-export.
So Glade basically, or the stubs that it creates, are somewhat protecting the code that is responsible for how Glade views the UI.
Right. It's the Glade designers are big fans of separating the content from the presentation.
Okay.
So the logic of the code is, you know, separate files, sometimes even a separate directory, doing their own thing, and then the UI and the sort of signal handling for that is in its own unit.
That's actually a very good design approach, right?
Right.
It helps keep the code clean and, well, reusable if you on using the same kind of UI or same logic in a different application.
Exactly, yes.
Now, Qt comes with its own IDE, right? And it's called
Qt Creator.
Qt Creator. I actually fired it up on a couple of machines that I have here, and it's pretty impressive, I must say.
Yeah, I played around with it for a little while. Probably a couple months ago, I actually created a small example application for our factory to show how Qt works in factory. And then I started a little side project on my own, which I've since lost a little bit of interest in.
Yeah.
But the, you know, hockey playoffs will do that too.
Well, Pittsburgh is a big Penguins town these days, and hopefully the series is going to end up well for us.
By the time this gets published, we might know. So
that's right.
We probably will.
Yeah. So the Qt Creator is it's very similar to what he was describing with Glade.
But Glade actually, well, so Qt Creator does both, though, right?
Correct. Yeah. So Qt Creator is both. It's actually, again, like this is a common theme with a lot of the Qt stuff. It was actually a bunch of different projects that are now kind of merged down into one.
Mm-hmm.
So you've got a graphical graphical environment designer, as well as a relatively full-fledged IDE underneath. So what you can do is create the user interface, generate stubs for various actions, and then actually use that same environment to edit those source files and fill in those stubs.
The logic.
And then you can build it and actually debug using that tool as well.
Okay. Well, so I think that if those were separate tools in the past, I have to say kudos to whoever integrated that together.
Yeah, I think the big different the one that was Qt Designer is what was eventually merged in, and that was the GUI designer tool.
I think that's actually a common theme in a lot of Linux IDEs, is that what they all did was they took different pieces that were really good at what they did and just sort of built sort of a window around all of them to put them all in the same application. There's an IDE that I'm a big fan of. It's called Anjuta.
Yep.
It's the official GNOME IDE, and it's basically what it does. You can fire up the UI designer, and it just instantiates Glade inside of the IDE, and then you switch over to a tab, and it's just a text editor, and you click on a button, and it fires up GCC in the background. It's very much the Unix philosophy of small tools that do one thing very well, and you can just chain them together.
Yep. And there were actually several attempts in the past and trying to identify a framework that would be easy to work with, that would allow to quickly connect those different blocks together and have a very nice build environment that's suitable to whatever customer is trying to do. But this is a good point, I guess, to start talking a bit about how TimeSys has integrated Qt into the build environment, the factory-based build environment that we offer. And it goes back to a point that we are making earlier, which is that in a typical Linux system, you have two parts. You have a system-level software, and then you have application-level software. To develop a Qt application, you need specific Qt libraries, Qt utilities to be present in both toolchain, cross-toolchain, and in a root file system, so that at runtime, your application knows how to resolve different symbols that it tries to leverage, right? So what is it that we have done with Qt to make it easy on end user to get the Linux-based platform, a custom Linux-based platform, up and running in their project?
Right. So I guess originally back in the good old days when there was Qt Extended, we were basically just offering it up as a package, the Qt Extended environment. And that had a lot of limitations. Like I was saying before, it was extremely difficult to get it for all of the boards, to get it working really well on all of the boards that we support. It was sort of a, I don't want to call it a support nightmare, but it was a development, you know, it was a lot of development work for not a lot of gain.
Right.
Eventually, they did switch it over to the current Qt embedded Linux, which we are now building for each platform individually. Mm-hmm. With and then when you build the Qt embedded Linux environment, you get QMake binary for your host that you use to build your source code. It's essentially you use QMake to generate make files and other things that you need in order to actually build your code.
Mm-hmm.
And that QMake is tailored to each individual. Well, you can configure it for each individual platform.
Okay.
So what we're essentially doing is looking at what platform you're using and generating the configurations for that, and then
so
building those tools.
Let me talk a bit about the benefits again of this approach. So what we are doing, which is different, or which is in addition to what Qt provides today, is that we cross-compile Qt embedded package for different target platforms, different ARMs, different versions of ARM processors, different optimizations, right? And actually that is happening also on customers' desktops. So as they build up the platform using our tools, using Factory, they will build a version of Qt, Qt embedded, that is optimized or built with the toolchain that's optimized for the target they are using, right? Now, this approach, the factory approach, after it cross-compiles the Qt package, it installs the same set of libraries in a cross-toolchain and in the root file system. So what happens is a customer that is developing an application or has developed an application using an x86 platform, they can simply cross-compile that same application using the cross-toolchain produced by a factory and deploy it on the ARM or any other architecture platform that they chose, right? So from the embedded cross environment, that's where Factory helps by providing a one cohesive build environment with other packages in a system that provide that baseline layer, the system layer, or how we call it also here, a Linux platform for application development that's enabled for Qt. Is that a true statement?
Yeah, I think that's a fair statement.
It's a pretty lengthy statement, huh?
Yeah.
You guys
it's also
kind
pretty
of were
shameless.
Like, this is kind of a bias, I guess, yeah. But it's a safe bias because as our listeners can definitely note, we are not spending most of our time talking about Timesys products, but we do want to explain how we have adopted or how we have worked with Qt so that you can also understand the points that we're trying to make during the conversation.
Yeah, so essentially there are two pieces to the to Qt as far as like the actual installation goes, what we are building. So there's a set of host tools that are included, which we are basically making part of our tool chain. And then there are the libraries, which you can think of as any other library.
Mm-hmm.
So the trick is really making sure that Qt is integrated with the way we have our tool chain set up.
Yeah.
And then making sure that it's really easy to just take your project that you've based on Qt and put it in there and have it build it without any real effort.
Yeah. So
just like you would normally build a Qt application on locally.
So an example of software that gets loaded into a root file system from Qt is like WebKit, right?
Right.
It comes with its own module for WebKit.
Correct.
And if as an end user or application developer, I'm using the WebKit UI or API, I won't have to worry about what WebKit I have in my root file system. It will pick the right one.
Right, and yeah, it's an inherent. I mean, that's just an inherent property of Qt in general. What it does is they take all of the things that they think that you're going to want to do with it,
mm-hmm.
and package them together so that you have a standard API to work with.
Right.
Otherwise, you have to worry about your application interfacing with, you know, whatever third-party WebKit library that you're using.
Yeah.
And there's no guarantee that that's cross-platform.
Right. Absolutely. I agree 100%. But I think that also there's this challenge that Factory solves, which is where you have to build that baseline Linux platform, and you have to cross-compile it for the target. And you have to do it in a way that it's consistent with your build environment for your application.
Right. And that's what we're providing, essentially, is it's a way to make these things consistent so that it's simple to do. The difficulty is it's not a terribly difficult thing to actually get Qt configured and running for a various platform once you know what you're doing.
Yeah.
But once you have your tool chain defined, and you know you actually know what files you need to edit and everything like that, it's a matter of you know pointing things to the right place, and Qt does an excellent job of doing that. But what's nice is we can take advantage of that here and actually make it really easy where you don't need to know, you know, how do I configure Qt to work for my environment? We've done that work for you,
especially if it's cross environment.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. Because by default, Qt is offered for x86 platforms, right? And some of Symbian-based systems that I'm not even sure what architectures there might be. I'm sure that there are a couple of ARMs, but Qt API is independent of our architecture, but the system-level libraries have to be cross-compiled for the target platform.
Right.
Okay, I think that we are running out of time. It was a very interesting conversation, I have to say. I think that the Git conversation, Justin, is also going to be
I can't wait.
Very heated one.
You're going to need a much longer podcast for that.
I have the entire office filled with Git converts now, so.
Yep.
Yeah, you can get us all in here and we just go on about it.
Okay, well, it looks like we'll have to get a couple of more mics for our studio here. thank you very much, guys, for your time today.
Sure, thank you.
No problem.
This podcast was brought to you by TimeSys. Are you new to embedded Linux? Looking for a way to simplify your next project? The Linux Link service by TimeSys makes it easy to build your custom embedded Linux platform. Go to timesys.com today or call 866-392-4897 to learn more.